WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Doctors William Masters, Virginia Johnson, and Robert Kolodny, three experts in the field of sexual behavior, have just released a new study about heterosexual behavior in the age of AIDS. Their book is titled Crisis. According to their study, AIDS has established a beachhead in the heterosexual population, and the odds are the rate of spread among heterosexuals will begin to increase at a frightening pace. The methodology and conclusions of this study have provoked widespread criticism from the medical and scientific communities. The New York Times just published an editorial criticizing the study for reviving old fears about AIDS while ignoring empirical evidence that put those fears to rest. A little later, we'll hear from a California AIDS researcher who is also studying the spread of AIDS among heterosexuals. She questions the validity of the Masters-Johnson-Kolodny study. I spoke with Masters-Johnson and Kolodny from the NPR studios in New York. Kolodny began by discussing what he thinks is the most important finding of their study.
The most important finding of the research is a confirmation in our minds that among a group of heterosexuals without risk factors from the original high-risk groups for AIDS infection, that is homosexual contact, bisexual male contact, or use of intravenous drugs, or having received a blood transfusion in the preceding 10 years, that there was a higher than expected rate of infection with the AIDS virus that correlated with the number of annual sexual partners. Not a surprising finding in terms of matches with what is already known about hepatitis B, about gonorrhea, and about many other sexually transmitted diseases. But until this study took place, there was no targeted data on a comparable non-clinical population showing that in the heterosexual community, this was existing beyond the minimal levels that have been reported, for instance, in the military screening programs or the blood bank screening programs, which do not, of course, gather behavioral data on the frequency or parameters of heterosexual activity of the millions of people who are screened there.
I think that there are at least two major issues within the realm of the question, is AIDS spreading into the heterosexual community? And one is heterosexual sex an easy way to spread the disease? And the other is, has the virus entered the heterosexual community so that it is being passed on from heterosexual partners to one another? Do you think that your study furthers the information in either of these areas? Do you think that we're learning more about how easily the virus is spread in the act of heterosexual sex and how much the virus has entered the heterosexual community?
The difficulty with the question of how the spread is occurring is that it will require a type of study that hasn't yet been done, a prospective study done over time, that is a study that follows a group of heterosexuals over a 2 to 3 year period that monitors their sexual behavior and the spread of the virus. It's virtually impossible right now to distinguish, to tease out how many cases of heterosexual infection originated from so-called secondary spread, that is, the sex partner of an IV drug user or the sex partner of a bisexual man, and how much is in so-called tertiary dimension, meaning between heterosexuals with no known risk factor whatsoever. That's the big question confronting us. On the question of the ease of a heterosexual single encounter transmitting the virus, I'll turn that one over to Dr. Masters.
Well, the single encounter is a rather rare thing. But, for instance, if one knows one's having sexual activity with an individual who has the disease, has the virus, the percentage chance of the partner being contaminated for the female is 1 in 400, and for the male, approximately 1 in 600 opportunities.
Which means that this is not an easily transmitted sexual disease in the sense that, for instance, gonorrhea would be. And yet, because the stakes are so much higher with this disease, The question of ease of transmission has to be put into the context of the seriousness of the consequences.
I think that's so important to emphasize. After all, we're not dealing with something that can be taken care of with a shot of penicillin or two. What we're talking about is something that, as everyone knows, is indeed at the present a fatal disease once it's been established.
Let me put it this way. In your book, you say that AIDS has established a beachhead within the heterosexual community, and it's going to start increasing in the heterosexual community in alarming numbers. I mean, Dr. Galadny, what are you predicting?
We're predicting, well, first, we are basing our statement of an established beachhead in the heterosexual community among estimates from a number of different studies, including many studies, at least half a dozen, of pregnant women who are clearly heterosexual, almost by definition, one might add, that would indicate to us that there are currently at least 200,000 infected heterosexuals, not cases of AIDS, but heterosexuals infected with the AIDS virus. Once that large a number has been reached, and with the knowledge that we gleaned from our own study, that among the group of people sometimes having 10, 15, 20, or 50 partners a year, that is a group, because of their large number of partners, more apt to spread the virus, more apt to expose others to it. We believe that if nothing is done dramatically in terms of public education, other public health programs, and legislative efforts, that if things are left as they are, these numbers will only escalate because, as the CDC itself has observed, in an epidemic, as the prevalence of an infection begins to increase, the risk to everybody who comes in contact with those infected people begins to heighten as well.
So you're concerned primarily about, in the heterosexual population, you're concerned primarily about people who have multiple partners every year.
This is exactly the case of the most rapid spread in the gay community as well, in the initial stages.
Yes, I think that's so important because what we're really dealing with is all we're seeing is reduplication of sexual practices in the heterosexual community with the type of practice, the cruising, that got was primarily responsible for the early spread of the virus in the homosexual community.
Let me reintroduce you all. My guests are Dr. William Masters, Virginia Johnson, and Robert Kolodny, three doctors who are the co-authors of the new book, Crisis, Heterosexual Behavior in the Age of AIDS. As you've probably heard by now, the book is very controversial, and their findings are being criticized, condemned, and contested within the medical community. The reaction has been loud, and in many areas, the reaction has been very negative to the book. Let's look specifically at the sample that you used to conduct your research. There were 800 people, 400 monogamous heterosexuals, and 400 heterosexuals who had multiple partners. In the population of people who you studied, can you describe their sexual practices as compared to the sexual practices in a more general population?
In the group with a large number of partners, it would certainly be true that they were somewhat more adventuresome sexually and engaged in a greater breadth of types of sexual activity and perhaps a somewhat higher frequency with certain activities, particularly anal intercourse.
What's the average number of sexual partners per year that the people in your study had?
It was approximately 12 per for the non-monogamous group. It was approximately 12 per year for the women and 10 per year for the men.
Now, your findings are being criticized because, A, these aren't random people. They're not scientifically random. You found your subjects by advertising for them in singles bars and places like that. So you have a very kind of skewed representation of the public. How do you defend the way that you've chosen the subjects for your sample?
I think one of the best ways to defend it is to point out that in the book we make it exquisitely clear that this is not a random sample.
Beyond that, the difficulty in the whole field is that there has been no random sample done in any aspect of investigating the prevalence of AIDS. That's one of the biggest difficulties confronting scientists. Certainly, we wish we had been able to do it. We didn't have the resources, And if the CDC and major universities haven't been able to either, we plead guilty to the charge that it's not random, but point out that there hasn't been one done yet in that fashion.
Now, let me just clarify something. You found that 6% of your group became infected with AIDS. So this is 6%.
No, with the AIDS virus.
With the AIDS virus.
With AIDS.
Okay.
And 6% of the group of 400 people with numerous sexual partners. In the monogamous group of 400 people, it was overall only a quarter of 1% that was infected.
So you would say that the application of this study is that if you generalize from this, that 6% of the population who is very heterosexually active with multiple partners might be in jeopardy?
No. Because the sample wasn't a random sample, we can't make that concrete and direct a generalization. Had we done the study in a half a million people, perhaps we could have made a stronger statement. All we can say is that there appears to be a strong correlation between the presence of the virus, the infection, in heterosexuals with large number of sexual partners, and that in those in monogamous relationships, it seems to be a very minimal occurrence.
So you're saying that the evidence indicates that it's appropriate to take more precautions than we're taking, but it's not appropriate to really make large generalizations yet.
Well,
I'm not sure of what you're saying, because on the one hand you're saying that the study counts, and on the other hand you're saying that you can't really generalize from it.
That's exactly right. We said both. There's no question that one can't generalize from the study because it's not a random sample. On the other hand, one can learn from the study. What the study really only requires, screens for, is a random sampling of a lot of subjects. And one, it's certainly beyond our, as Dr. Gladney pointed out, our financial capability to do. It is really, to get back to the cases, the responsibility of government organizations to do that. That's where the money is, and it has not been done. And that's what we're trying to point out. Ours is but a pilot study. We've never claimed anything else. End results to be determined only after one follows up in the pilot study with definitive objective research.
Okay, well, to get to some of your controversial reporting about how AIDS is spread, after we take a short break, and my guests are Drs. William Masters, Virginia Johnson, and Robert Kolodny, author of the new, very controversial book, Crisis: Heterosexual Behavior in the Age of AIDS. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Drs. William Masters, Virginia Johnson, and Robert Kolodny, and we're talking about their new controversial findings on heterosexual behavior and AIDS. Now, you make many controversial, very strong statements about how AIDS can be spread. For instance, you talk about how AIDS could perhaps be spread by kissing. And you say that there's really not been any identified cases in which kissing was the primary means of the transmission of the virus. But then you say, but shouldn't we be adapting precautions against the worst case possibility rather than making the most optimistic assumption? So what I come away with from your study is that, as far as we know, AIDS has never been spread by kissing. But theoretically, maybe it could be, so shouldn't we really worry about it and act accordingly?
Yes.
It's a little confusing to me, because on the one hand, we have no evidence it's been spread that way, and on the other hand, you're really promoting this fear that AIDS can be spread by kissing.
Let me suggest this context for understanding that. If a person is in a relationship with a sexual partner who is infected, where research has clearly identified that live virus can be present in saliva, we think that most prudent doctors would actually recommend that such a couple be extremely cautious about deep kissing that would involve the exchange of saliva because of the possibility of infection occurring through a cut or nick or blister or rash inside the uninfected partner's mouth, providing a means of entry for the virus. The general population not infected clearly doesn't have to worry about this issue. We raise the point not only that there are no proven cases, which we stated and concur with, but also that the likelihood of ever being able to prove in a real-life situation that a person was infected by kissing would be so extraordinarily difficult that even if it was occurring once in 100,000 or once in 1,000,000 times, there would be no way to document that. How could you find a person who had only engaged in kissing and no other sexual contact? It would be an epidemiologist's nightmare. We are not meaning to be alarmists, but we are meaning to say that to dismiss absolutely the possibility that there could ever be transmission by kissing is to be playing an undefensible scientific position just to cheer up the public.
You've also studied the behavior of heterosexuals in the age of AIDS.
Yes.
What have you found about how sexual conduct is changing? Do you find that people are practicing abstinence more or using protections like condoms more?
I think that there is always a segment of the population that is a thinking, well-considered attitude toward their sexual behavior, toward their relationships. But there is so much evidence that large numbers of people are continuing to do what they have always done, either through a feeling of individual invincibility. You see, we have a very strong belief, and our 30-plus mm-hmm. years of work in this field has led us to respond to the public's need to know. This, we feel that an informed, knowledgeable population is one that can make choices. So we don't censor or sit in defense or criticism, I should say, of those people who still advertise very freely in New York, for instance, the Village Voice, in St. Louis, our own city, and the Riverfront Times, and I'm sure this is fairly generalized over the country, advertising for partners that are unknown, strangers to join them in sexual relationships or events. There's a lot of this that still prevails, and many of these people live a rather dual life. And consequently, if they are informed, and they choose to continue to do this, fine. But I'm afraid there isn't enough behavior change that we can be sure of at this time.
We know a question that a lot of people who aren't in monogamous relationships have is, if I meet someone who I want to engage in sexual relations with, how do I know if they have the virus? How do I know if I'll be protected if we have sex? You make a recommendation that basically two people who come together in a new relationship who've had previous sexual encounters get tested for AIDS and then abstain for 6 months, you know, before they have sex. Would you explain that recommendation?
The reason for the six-month waiting period before having both partners in the couple be tested a second time is that it has been shown that in a certain number of cases of infection, it takes months for the antibody response to reach a measurable level, so that it is possible, for instance, if a man and woman meet and they had each had other partners 2 months before, they could on that day test as seronegative, and yet virus could be in their body, they could be infected, one or the other, and therefore could be placing the partner at risk. The rationale for waiting for the 6 months is that that would cover the great majority of cases in which it takes time for the antibody to develop. Interestingly, after we wrote that recommendation approximately 5 months ago when we were preparing the manuscript, the CDC and the American Fertility Society, among others, have just come out in the last 2 weeks and issued the identical recommendation for sperm donor programs. That is, before being able to use a sperm specimen, which in some ways is similar in the exposure to the virus, the donor must be tested, the sperm specimen must be frozen and stored for 6 months, and then the donor must be tested a second time, and only if the second test is negative is the sperm specimen to be released. That's now suggested government policy on sperm donor programs. So apparently there was some sensibility to the recommendation. But interestingly, despite our having already given dozens and dozens of interviews, you're the first person who's asked us about that very practical and, we think, useful point of advice geared to the millions of people who are in the situation you mention.
We're about out of time, so let me ask you one last question. Based on the results of your study, what advice would you like to give heterosexuals, because your study is about heterosexuals, and what kind of action do you think the government should perhaps be taking that it's not?
First, the government has to do a objective study of what we did as a pilot study. Number two, we certainly have to practice safer sex, as described here. And number three, we think that required and mandatory testing in the number of situations that we outline is a vital public health protection.
Okay. Well, I thank you all for talking with us. Thank you.
It's been a
pleasure.
Thanks
for having us.
That was William Masters, Virginia Johnson, and Robert Kolodny, authors of the new book Crisis: Heterosexual Behavior in the Age of AIDS. The spread of AIDS in the heterosexual population is also the subject of a study now underway at the University of California at Berkeley's School of Health. It's known as the California Partner Study, and the project director is Nancy Padian, a research epidemiologist. The study is investigating the transmission of the AIDS virus in heterosexual couples where one of the partners is infected with the AIDS virus or has tested positive for the HIV antibody. I asked Padian what preliminary results she could draw from her study.
My data is most thorough in male-to-female transmission, and over about 140 female partners of infected men, approximately 23 to 24% themselves are infected. And factors that seem to increase the likelihood of infection are the practice of anal intercourse. However, I want to stress that it's not necessary for it to occur. I mean, women who have practiced anal intercourse in addition to vaginal intercourse have a higher chance of becoming infected, but there's women in the study who have become infected who have only practiced vaginal intercourse. Another interesting finding is the heterogeneity having related to infectiousness, where some people seem to become infected based on only a few contacts with their infected partner, whereas other people remain uninfected in spite of large numbers of contacts. And I think this is an area where we're going to see a lot of study trying to pinpoint factors that are associated with transmission to help us better predict why transmission occurs in some instances and not in other instances.
So you are finding, then, that AIDS can be transmitted sexually between heterosexuals, that it's more likely to occur, it's more likely to get transmitted through anal intercourse, but it can get transmitted through intercourse involving the penis and the vagina.
Right. I mean, no, I don't think anyone's disputing whether it can occur, but studies like mine aren't going to tell you about what the prevalence is of heterosexually exposed people in the country. I mean, I enroll people who definitely have a verified infected partner. And the question is, you know, well, what proportion of heterosexual people have infected partners that may not know? And that's something you're not going to get from my study. But I think where scientists are taking issue with the Masters and Johnson's results, or at least what they're doing with their results, how they're interpreting their results, is that there has not been a lot of evidence of heterosexual spread of the disease beyond partners of people in initial risk groups. So while partners of intravenous drug users themselves have become infected and partners of bisexual men, we see very little of tertiary spread, where those infected partners then turn around and infect their other partners.
So you disagree with Masters at Johnson and Kolodny, who say that AIDS has established a beachhead in the heterosexual community?
Well, I have to know what they mean by the heterosexual community. I mean, I think that there are certain minority inner-city areas where, particularly among the partners of intravenous drug users, you do see a heterosexual spread. But again, you see very little of this tertiary spread, so they would have to define what they mean by the heterosexual population. It's a very heterogeneous thing, and if they're talking about the partners of IV drug users, then I would say, yes, they're right. But if they're talking about middle-class Caucasian people who don't have direct contact with people who are in a known risk group, then I would take issue with it.
Sorry. They are, by the way, talking about that latter group.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
See, I haven't read the book. I've only read the media, how the media has presented the group. If they're talking about that latter group, then I would take issue with it.
They're talking about largely white, middle class, people who have not been exposed or at least do not admit being exposed to homosexuals, bisexuals,
or intravenous drug users,
yeah.
Well, then I would take issue with if that's how they're defining the heterosexual population. And in fact, when I talked about this before, where there have been other samples looked at that are derived from clinics where people get treatment for sexually transmitted diseases, many of them have been in clinics that are based in cities where there is a fair amount of partners of IV drug users and a fair amount of people in initial risk groups. And the fact that those samples are in areas where there already is a higher prevalence of infection and they're still finding lower rates of infection in those samples, I think, once again, you would want to know a lot more about their data collection methods and their interpretation of their results. Again, bear in mind that I haven't read the book. I've only read summaries of the books in the media.
So, if I understand you correctly, from your research, you're finding that the virus can, in fact, be spread through heterosexual sex, but that the patterns of transmission are showing that really the only way it seems to be ending up in the heterosexual population is through heterosexuals having sex with people who are homosexual, bisexual, or IV drug
now,
users.
That's what we're seeing. But keep in mind, you see, there's a lot of factors in predicting how something is going to spread. One is, you want to establish biological plausibility that it can, in fact, be transmitted. And yes, my study has done that. It can. And lots of other studies have done that, too. The other thing you need to know is the prevalence of the virus in the communities. What is the likelihood that you're going to have contact with an infected partner? And then the other thing is, what is the infectivity? Given the fact that there's a certain probability that you're going to have an infected partner, what is the likelihood that upon exposure to that partner that you're going to become infected? So there's a lot of variables involved in trying to get a picture of what's going on over the population, not simply the fact that it can occur.
Given what you know and what you know about the general research and of your own research, do you recommend that heterosexuals who are not monogamous practice safe sex at this point in time?
Yeah, I do. See, because even though I disagree with what Masters and Johnson's conclude, I still think they should, because this is a lethal disease and there is no cure. And even if your chance is 1 in 1 million or 1 in 100,000, once, the only sure way to prevent against getting AIDS is to not get infected to begin with. And it seems to me you've got to err on the side of caution that incorporating safer sex practices into normal, healthy sexual behavior is not a lot to ask. It's a protective thing not only for AIDS, but for other sexually transmitted diseases as well. And I would recommend that, yes.
Nancy Padian is the project director of the California Partner Study. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.